Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Bethany Gilbert, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Pastor Dusty White of Corumdale Church and Pastor Chris Hemmelman of First City Church. Every Wednesday, we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today, we're talking about Harvard's atheist chaplain.
Here's the news from Cambridge, Massachusetts, reading from the Harvard Crimson, which is the student newspaper at Harvard University, September 9th, 2021. The article begins this way. Last month, the Harvard Chaplains Organization made an eye-catching move that, believe it or not, promises to touch believers and non-believers alike. In a unanimous vote carried out by a select group of campus religious leaders, the organization elected humanist chaplain Greg Epstein, an atheist, as its president. Much of the press coverage surrounding Epstein's historic election has sensationalized the choice, highlighting the apparent irony of an atheist holding a traditionally religious position at a school founded to educate clergy, no less. Some explained the situation as only possible at liberal old Harvard. Meanwhile, the Harvard Catholic Center has attempted to downplay the election's importance by claiming that Epstein serves a purely administrative role in the organization, whatever that means. In reality, Epstein's presidency is indeed significant, a bit of a shock, and most importantly, cause for celebration. The authors of this editorial will go on to talk about why they think it's worthy of celebration that Harvard has an atheist chaplain. But we got an email from, an email from a listener who said, hey, I'd love it if you guys would talk about this. And so, Bethany, I'm going to have you read that email. And I'd also like to give a shout out to Sarah, who has provided us with some delicious freshly baked cookies for this podcast.
They're very yummy.
Have you tried one yet, Dustin?
I haven't, but I plan to during this.
While Bethany
while
reads
I this. Pull these closer.
Let me
pull
these closer. For a while,
while Bethany reads this email.
Cookies in his mouth.
Bethany also brought us some fall cinnamon spice donuts. Apple cider donuts. From Trader Joe's. I like that you just had a backup plan in case snacks were not provided by a listener.
Always be prepared.
Our intrepid.
I love that this is the expectation now.
Our intrepid producer gets the snacks.
It's what keeps me coming over here every Wednesday.
Bethany, can you read or summarize the listener who emailed? This person, I think, is a chaplain.
Yes. So we received an email from Julian, and he said, this has been an especially intriguing topic for me. As a chaplain, I've received questions from various people of what my thoughts are on Harvard's newly appointed president of the Harvard Chaplains. To be honest, I'm still thinking through it. If atheism is not religious or spiritual in nature, as many of its adherents claim, I find it difficult to maintain that there is no religious fabric contained in it, especially when there is not only humanist chaplains, but one who is the leader of an interfaith collective of campus chaplains. I wonder what sort of implications this could potentially have on culture, the church, and being on mission.
I think it's a great question, Julian, so thanks for bringing it to our attention. Here's how some other people have responded to the atheist chaplain controversy. By the way, keep in mind, this is Harvard University, which means two things. One, it's an elite institution in our culture, probably one of the most elite places. It's also a place that has a storied history, founded in 1636 by the first Puritans to settle in New England as an institution for training ministers. So it has certainly departed quite a ways from its foundings. But it does raise I think it makes this all the more significant in light of the history of Harvard, right? A school that used to be essentially a seminary for training pastors now has an atheist as its chaplain. And that says something about where our culture has gone in the last 400 years.
Another quick thing on history. Our friend Eric Raymond writes, between 1642 and 1689, 46% of Harvard grads were ministers. And according to a 1696 survey, 62 out of the 71 ministers active in Massachusetts were Harvard grads.
Yeah, so this place had a huge impact in the early Great Awakening and in the spiritual climate of New England in its earliest days. So here's a quote from the new president of the Harvard Chaplains. We don't look to a God for answers. We are each other's answers. Doesn't that sound like a deep thought?
Could you say that again in a radio voice? I'm just kidding.
We don't look to God for answers. We are each other's answers. So, by the way, here's what you need to understand. Harvard has 30 chaplains. So this is an institution that does have like a chaplaincy, and there's a you call it a collegium of these things. There's rabbis and there's Muslims and there's Christians and there's apparently an atheist. And so there's this whole sort of collective of chaplains, and that's who elected this guy as their president. So it's not like this is the only person on campus giving people spiritual counsel. I'm sure if you want to talk to an Episcopal minister or a Catholic priest or an evangelical, those people are there. It's just sort of noteworthy that the president of the Harvard Chaplains Association is this atheistic, secular humanist. Here's a response from Auxiliary Bishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Los Angeles, Robert Barron. He says this: I have a problem with the chaplains of Harvard University electing someone who, by his own admission, does not believe in God precisely as a chaplain. A chaplain is someone who has to do with a chapel. A chapel is a place where God is worshipped. If you don't believe in God, then you're not a chaplain. That seems to be a fairly common sense.
Yeah, sure. Common That's sense fair. Thing to say. That's fair.
Don't you think as an atheist, you would almost be offended to be called a chaplain?
I would think so. However, here's
Is
what...
a little overly literal, though?
Well...
I mean, the guy's been operating as a chaplain for... since what he's been there since, like, 2005?
Since 2005.
So, like, he just showed up on the scene.
He does.
True.
I mean,
true.
I get what he's saying, but it also feels like, how dare he call himself a chaplain? It's like, you're, like, 15 years late.
Well, it's just that he got elected president, and now people are like, wait, what? There's an atheist at Harvard? What are
Fair enough. About? Fair enough.
I do think, you know... if you listen to Greg Epstein describe his own role, he essentially says, hey, humanism affirms our ability and responsibility to lead ethical lives of personal fulfillment, aspiring to humanity's greater good. He wrote a book back in 2005 called Good Without God. So he's trying to make a case for ethics without religion. And whatever you think about the philosophical merits of that case, he does seem to be a guy who has a concern that people would live a good life. And again, we can argue about whether his definition of good is the correct one. But, so he seems like a person that's not just like, I don't believe in anything. He seems like a person who's saying, I don't believe in God, but I still think there's an ethical grounding for how human beings should live. And so to your point, Chris, he has been there for as long as Coram Deo Church has existed. So he's been doing this a while. Here's another quote from Greg Epstein. He says, he told the New York Times, there's a rising group of people who no longer identify with any religious tradition, but still experience a real need for conversation and support around what it means to be a good human and live an ethical life. In the article that I'm reading from here, which is the New Yorker, says atheists and agnostics constitute nearly 40% of Harvard's freshman class this year, twice the size of the next largest group, which is Catholics. By the numbers alone, the chaplain who ministers to them is entitled to a leadership position. So he's seems to be a person who cares about people living ethically. And, you know, if you're just saying, hey, is the beliefs of the student body represented? There might be a case for, okay, you should have a guy who is a atheist, since 40% of the student body considers themselves atheist or agnostics. I don't know. What do you think?
I think I can totally go with just Harvard's approach on it's an administrative role. We got 40% of our students making up atheism, agnostic. It's fine. It's an administrative role. I think, so I can give them that.
You're a chaplain.
Yeah. And actually, once you get into the chaplain room, you kind of look around and go, I guess I'm the only one that believes what I believe. Yeah. And it feels kind of isolating. So I think the real conversation is less about should Harvard have an atheist chaplain as the president of the chaplains, and more about this is something to lament. And really, it's another avenue of looking for a sense of revival.
Okay, good. So there's a cultural factor there. Chris, I want to ask you, since you're the expert on irony, is it ironic that Harvard has an atheist did the word atheist chaplain even make sense?
It seems to be a contradiction in terms, which is a form of verbal irony. So
okay,
yes,
cool.
Yes, fair enough.
So it is ironic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, two pieces on this. One, so I think what I find most fascinating about Julian's question is sort of at the end where he says, what does this mean sort of for cultural engagement and mission? I want to come back to that. Just on sort of what is happening at Harvard, I think it's also important for folks to note that a guy named Pete Williamson, who is a chaplain at Harvard, he's an evangelical chaplain at Harvard. I believe he's Anglican, and he works for InterVarsity Christian Fellowship. So he's part of this crew. Wrote an article in Christianity Today explaining why he voted for Greg Epstein and sort of the role that he was playing. And he pointed out that really that the chaplains at Harvard are loosely affiliated. Like, no one has control over anybody else. And this council of chaplains basically work together to kind of just coordinate and to just have this sense of, hey, we're all here together. How can we do this in the best way? And he said, you know, a couple years ago or a couple presidents ago, the person voted in was evangelical, and he himself was voted on into one sort of committee. And so everybody really does play nice. So there's nothing nefarious underneath that there was an atheist. It wasn't trying to, you know, like push evangelicals out or push people of faith out of this space. And so I think it's important to get a word from a guy who's in the room on the ground. He points out, hey, there's also a problem with the way this was covered in the media. And yeah. So the New York Times and some other outlets sort of blew this up and made it more than what it was.
Because they love it. It's an atheist chaplain.
Yeah, and even the way they described the position made it sound like he had this control over all the other chaplains, or he was the head of the divinity school. And so if you just kind of took the way that the media portrayed this, you'd think, oh, wow, this really does seem to be an attempt to push people of faith out and push in sort of a secularism. So taking a step back and going, okay, what's actually happening on the ground in Harvard? This just seems to be a business as usual, so to speak, that these folks have been all relating to one another for a while now. And this is just a position that a person holds for a couple of years and then they vote somebody else in. So after kind of reading all of this, I kind of think, well, this feels a little much to do about nothing, just as far as a thing.
You don't think it's a big deal that the former Puritan headquarters of pastoral training now has an atheist chaplain?
Well, that's a whole other story. It's funny, in one of the articles, there's an article out there kind of talking about Harvard, and as early as George Whitefield was calling Harvard liberal. So yeah. Harvard's been called liberal.
Off the train for a long time.
It didn't even really, you know, less than 100 years after its founding, and you already have people calling it liberal. I get it. I get that there's a sense of the weirdness of an atheist being called a chaplain. But here's the other piece, and I think this is gets to more Julian's last sort of point there. So he's specifically the humanist chaplain. And so for atheists, I think what's fascinating is atheism as a belief system fancies itself, you know, hey, largely scientific. We believe in science, the natural world. There's nothing supernatural. But humanism, I think, is the result of recognizing you can't live without a sense of the spiritual or the philosophical, whatever you want to call it. And so in some ways, humanism and the humanist chaplain is an acknowledgement of things that I think some atheists would maybe even try to deny. So I think just the existence of a humanist chaplain is fascinating.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that in a minute. First of all, here's where I come down on this, because I think our listeners probably fall in all kinds of places when you hear about, like, hey, Harvard has an atheist chaplain. The president of the chaplains at Harvard is an atheist. Hey, Christians, how do you feel about that? There's probably a wide diversity of opinion. Here's how I feel about it. Yawn.
Oh, wow.
I just don't care. Here's why. Because it's Harvard. It's the Ivy League. No one is surprised. And it's higher education in America. If this surprises anyone, I think, where have you been for the last 50 years? You know, in my mind, this isn't even a big deal. Also for the reasons you mentioned, that this is technically just a position that's elected by peers. It's not this person is saying, I'm going to control the instruction of all the other chaplains. And I think, to your point, Dusty, with your experience, anytime you're in a community of chaplains, there's a diversity there. And if you don't have a problem with Harvard having a Muslim chaplain, I don't know why you'd have a problem with Harvard having an atheist chaplain, unless you just feel like, hey, atheism is not a thing. It's a non-religion, and so it shouldn't have a chaplain. But I'm just saying, like, if you're a Christian, I don't know that a Muslim influence on campus is any better or worse or different than an atheist influence on campus. And so I just think, yeah, this is not... I do not, other than the lament of the historical trajectory of where our country is, I'm just like, you know what, whatever, this is not a big deal, and no one should make a big deal of it.
So something else that Pete Williamson points out in his Christianity Today article is that just a few decades ago, evangelicals were largely excluded from religious life on Harvard campus. It was mostly, if you wanted to have any sort of chaplaincy presence on campus, you had to be part of the mainline Protestant denomination. And so what has actually happened over the past several decades is a much more multi-faith inclusive space that these various chaplains represent. And so there's actually greater evangelical presence now than there has been. And another thing that Pete points out is that Greg Epstein is actually one who supports that inclusivity and has really worked well
he's
with
a good humanist.
Exactly. So again, if this is a fear that somehow the evangelical presence is being pushed off campus, what seems to be happening on the ground actually is not that. So I echo your point, Bob. One, it's Harvard. What would you expect? And two, hey, it sounds like the evangelicals are actually thriving in the current structure that is happening. I mean, as much as, you know, evangelicalism can thrive on a campus like Harvard. So anyway, that's where I'm kind of like,
Chris, while okay. We were just talking about that, Bethany ate a little apple cider donut over there. Mm-hmm. She helped herself to that box.
Mm-hmm. Not the whole box. I mean, just a piece of the donut. But I'm just saying I like
could eat the whole box.
I like that you're diving in on the snacks that you bought. I appreciate that.
Had to try
don't
it
buy
out.
Them if you don't want to eat them, you know?
Yeah, only buy snacks you would
that's
eat.
That's right.
That's like a rule,
that's
right?
That's the rule. The broader interesting principle this raises for me is what you said, Chris, which is I think it speaks to the fact that there is no such thing as a consistent secularism. That, to use Cornelius Van Til's language, any kind of secularism or humanism is living off of borrowed capital. It's borrowing from the Christian worldview in order to exist. Because what Greg Epstein wants to do is he wants to have it both ways. He wants to say, I'm an atheist agnostic. I don't believe there's a God. I don't believe in any kind of higher power. But I do believe in spiritual meaning and the need for spiritual counsel and for people to live a good life. Well, why do you believe that? Based on what? The longing in the human soul that is fulfilled by the what a chaplain does, right? The sense that I need some counsel and someone to help me think about the deeper things in life. That betrays the fact that every human being acknowledges those longings exist and they have to come from somewhere. So it's interesting to me that we have here, I think, an indication of the reality that no one can consistently live as though there is no deeper meaning or no deeper reality to what it means to be human.
Yeah, and that right there, again, to Julian's question and point, is the importance to recognize, you know, with mission and in, you know, sharing the gospel, engaging those that would claim a secular humanistic viewpoint, is to sort of point to that of, hey, a life devoid of what we would call it the spiritual or philosophical, whatever, the immaterial, is impossible. And that gives sort of the inroads to conversation. So in some ways, you could even look at Greg Epstein's existence on a campus and go, that's actually an open door.
Well, I just can't, you know, a couple of weeks ago, we had our friends here from Boston, Eric Raymond and crew, a couple more pastors along with him, and they're trying to plant churches. And so we're here in the Midwest, you know, chopping it up about Harvard and having the Ivy League perspective. And even my perspective is, you know, similar to you, Chris, like this isn't something for evangelicals to be really ruffled about now. We're pretty late to this party, and so we shouldn't be surprised. My perspective is it's pretty administrative role, but I can't help but to think about what's their angle. You know, they're there. Raymond's post recently was the America's graveyard of spirituality or something like that, whatever he called it. And I'm butchering his blog post title, but something like that. So I can't help but to think about, like, man, if I was on the East Coast, does this matter in a different perspective than where we sit?
Yeah. Well, and I think maybe here's the interesting angle it creates to what maybe those two things connect, what you just said, Dusty, and what you just said, Chris, because I think the interesting connection it makes is that if it's true that even in a post-Christian society where people are dismissive of any claims to ultimate reality, they still believe in the existence of a soul or of an immaterial part of human beings, that can be an interesting place to start, right? And so I think if you're thinking about what does mission look like in a post-Christian context, and in a sense, apart from a renewing grace of God, where New England is now is where we're all going to be eventually, you know. I mean, it's burned over country in a sense. It's a place where there was revival and renewal 300 years ago, and now it's very much post-Christian and very secularized. But I think even in that secularized milieu, there are longings that can't be fulfilled and a sense that there's something grander and more mysterious to what it means to be human that even secular humanists give credence to. And that can be a starting point then, I think, for conversation about God. The other thing I think there's just a general revelation principle here that there actually is, there's a need for us as Christians to be good neighbors. Mm. And like, I think if you're a Christian chaplain at Harvard, this is part of being a good neighbor, yeah. is just saying, hey, I realize not everybody on this campus shares my worldview. And if I felt like there should only be a Christian evangelical chaplain here, that would actually probably be not being a good neighbor to the diversity of people who are present here. I remember, I've told this story, I think, on this podcast before, but this has been a number of years ago now, maybe 8 or 9 years ago. I got invited to the Midwest Freethought Conference at UNO, which was this huge conference of all these secularists. It was basically all secular humanists, atheists, agnostics from all over the Midwest. I was the only, well, there was one other guy, me and this guy, Fred, were the only Christians in the room. And they invited us to come because they wanted to do like a panel, like a Q&A with some Christian pastors. And literally the first question, so we do this open forum. It's like a room full of 200 to 300 atheists. What do you want to ask me? It was really scary. And not scary. It was a little bit intimidating. And literally the first question they asked was, why are Christians so threatened by atheists? Which I thought was a compelling question, because I was like, hey, the first question they want to talk about is not worldview. It's mm-hmm. not let's debate the existence of God. It's, hey, why do you guys think we're such bad, terrible, scary people? And I just tried to reassure them, like, hey, I'm sorry that some Christians think that. I don't think that. I'm not scared by any of you. I think you're wonderful human beings made in the image of God. And from my perspective, looking for reality, and I don't agree with what you think you're finding, but I don't find you to be scary people. So I do think there's among, especially people who are sort of secular and convictionally so, there's sort of a perception that, you know, Christians think they're dangerous, scary people that we should keep our kids away from. And I think we win when we disempower that and when we just treat them like neighbors, like people who live in the world and are made in the image of God. And we might not agree with where they find themselves right now in terms of how they understand reality, but they're human beings.
Yeah, and that's one of the things, again, reflecting on what's happening at Harvard, it sounds like it's the kind of pluralism that we say we want in society, right? Where you actually have interfaith happen. Now, again, you don't all know all the things that are happening, but it sounds as if what Harvard has established here is something you wouldn't expect on a liberal campus, where there's actually a place for evangelical space, and that at one point it wasn't that way, and it's actually moved in a better direction. So to sort of lean into this process and go, oh, when you look at what's happening, there's much to celebrate here in a world that seems to be so incredibly tribal, and also a place where, again, I'd encourage our readers, if you haven't read Pete Williamson's article in Christianity Today, to do that, where he kind of paints the picture of why he says, the article is why I voted for an atheist chaplain. And
provocative.
And he just gives that, and it really is, to your point, Bob, is to be a good neighbor, to co-op with someone who has co-opted with him in a way that actually is, you know, to your point, being a good neighbor, being, you know, this sense that, hey, we can occupy the same space and not be threatened by each other.
No disrespect to Pete Williamson, but that is a super clickbaity title.
Oh, totally.
I guarantee the Christianity Today editors titled that post, because how are you going to get more clicks than why I voted for an atheist chaplain? Man, atheists are going to click that. Christians are going to click that.
So
that's
good.
Brilliant. One other thought, just as I read the Harvard Crimson article, which is an editorial by students, you know, who are saying, hey, this is great. This is good for Harvard. There's a reasoning here that I think is interesting that you need to be aware of that's out there in the world that connects to things that James K. Smith and Tim Keller have talked about, and Charles Taylor when he talks about subtraction stories, that the sort of dominant secular narrative is the world's getting less and less religious and more secular. And I think Christians can easily buy that narrative, because that's what it feels like, even with what I just said about, hey, we're all going to be where New England is. That's what they say right here in this article. A plurality of this year's newest students at Harvard identify as either atheist or agnostic, and the number of non-believers across the country is steadily rising. Epstein's unanimous election signals to these students that Harvard is a place where they, too, can access the grounding life guidance church can offer without spirituality. So they're saying, hey, non-believers everywhere are rising. And what Keller points out is, yeah, that's actually not true in the world, though. So we need to be careful that we're not buying into the narrative that like, oh, Christianity is like extinct.
Yeah,
and
it's
all,
over.
You know, all around us, secularism is rising. No, actually, globally, all faiths are on the rise. The world is not becoming a more and more secular place, but the West is becoming a more and more secular place. And so it's interesting, as we hear narratives like that, I think there's ways we can react defensively and feel like, oh, yeah, you know, that's why people get mad about there being an atheist chaplain. It's like, oh, Christianity's losing its cultural grounding. And in a sense, that's true in the West. But just remember that the Spirit of God is at work in greater ways than that around the world. And so that subtraction story, the sense that the world is getting less and less religious, is not true. Well, Julian, the listener, thanks for inviting us to think on this topic with you. And thanks for your work serving as a chaplain. You didn't say in your message where you serve, but thankful for that. Thanks, Dusty, for serving our local law enforcement as a chaplain. And for all the Christians out there doing this kind of work, we celebrate you. And also hope that you maybe gain some perspective on this particular news story and think a little bit further about what it means to be a chaplain and how we sort of participate with those around us in a way that honors both grace and truth and seeks to be good neighbors. So thanks for the question, Julian, and hope this was helpful to you as a listener for those of you listening far and wide.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or a church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in, and we pray that this conversation might be helpful to you as you minister in your context. We love to hear from listeners, so if you have thoughts, questions, or future podcast topics, send an email to podcast@cdomaha.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday for another episode of the Wednesday Conversation.